Welcome to a very special edition of Red Voices, the official Manchester United podcast, brought to you by ManchesterUnited.com and MUTV. Now, as you know, we usually broadcast from Old Trafford, but today we're going to have to make do with a New Jersey hotel overlooking the Manhattan skyline. I'm Stuart Gardner from MUTV, and joining me as we discuss United's tour of the States and the forthcoming season is a treble-winning Reds legend, an actor famous for his roles in Lost, Lord of the Rings, and Flash Forward, and a journalist from MainUnited.com. Andrew Cole, Dominic Wallen, and Nick Cobbett. Welcome along. I'm going to have to start with you, Dominic, because it's the first time we've had a Hollywood actor on the podcast.
Hollywood actor,
probably
like
the
that.
Last as well, I'd imagine. The last for a while. For the people who don't know, tell us about your United supporting background.
Yeah, I'm from Manchester. My mum is from Cholton. My dad is from Fallowfield. My dad is a Blue. Somehow he managed to get two sons who were Reds. I was born in Germany and lived there until I was 11, obviously going backwards and forwards to Manchester. And at that time, in like the mid-1970s, the only teams that really travelled over to the continent, because obviously we didn't have Sky Sports or any of that stuff at that point, was Liverpool, due to their position in the league in Division One, and United. And City really didn't make any, you know, huge leaps and bounds over there. So I think my dad, who's a very passionate football player and fan, just thought, well, he's not going to support Liverpool, obviously. Can't do that to my son. So we became United fans, you know. And it's good now, because as an adult with my dad, we can have some really fun banter. I've been really excited to see the changes in City and to hear my dad, you know, talking it up, and then things don't work out, or, you know, winning the FA Cup and giving me a little hassle, because he's been taking it in the neck for years from me and my brother, you know.
Soccer in the USA, what we've seen over the last couple of weeks in United's arrival here, there seems to have been a real upswing in interest, looking at people outside the team hotels, which we didn't really see even a year ago. So is that a United specific thing, or is it soccer overall growing in popularity?
I think, you know, the crest of United is something that Americans really know. You know, like I go to the gym in my United kit all the time, and people are able to point out the United crest and know what it's all about. But, you know, Bex has obviously done football a huge favour in America. I mean, when he came out that first probably 6 to 9 months or so before he got injured and didn't play, he was just everywhere in America, just everywhere. He's probably the most famous sportsman in America at that time, and I think that did a lot. Rooney's star continues to be on the rise, and then obviously in the past recent year or so, Chicharito has been incredible. I went into this football shop to get the new home kit to come on tour, and about a third of the shop was Chicharito. It was shorts, shirts, posters, and there's people, you know, because of his performance in the Copa, there's people just buying his shirts left, right and centre.
It's been mad over here, hasn't it? Chicharito mania. Everywhere you go, people want to know where he is, how he's doing. I mean, he didn't actually join the tour until here in New Jersey, but everyone in Seattle, Chicago, Boston, all they wanted to know is, you know, is Chicharito going to be here? Are we going to see him?
Yeah,
it's incredible when you think that, you know, it was last April that we announced that we'd signed this Mexican kid who nobody knew anything about. We thought, oh, it's just another one of Sir Alex's gambles. You know,
had a great World Cup though, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. You know, some of them pay off, some of them don't. This one is, it certainly has, hasn't it?
Because you'd never imagine him to come to the Premiership and do as well as he has done.
Amazing.
It's been phenomenal. And I think being Mexican in the US as well is a big thing.
Yeah.
If you do well, they will love you in Mexico.
Yeah.
He's done extremely well. Long may it continue.
Yeah. You know? Must have been interesting for Berbatov, eh? Because, I mean, Berbatov got joint top scorer with Tevez. Got, you know, didn't get selected for the Champions League final. And Chicharito seems to be in much more favour, you know. So it's got to be a weird feeling for Berbatov to win the Golden Boot and not be number one choice, you know.
Well, the manager's got so many choices now up front. I think here on tour there's six strikers.
Six, yeah.
Mental.
And he said he wants to keep most of them here at the club. He's not talking about sending Danny Welbeck out on loan or Makeda. You know, they both had loan spells last season. And I think both those players would like to stay and fight for a place here at United and feel that they've got something to offer.
Is it possible, Coley, that he could face this sort of so-called second season syndrome? No one's surprised by him anymore. Everyone knows what he's got to offer.
Yeah, I think everyone knows that's one of the toughest things. I think we know what the Premiership's about. I think when you're an unknown quality coming into the Premiership, as your first season as a centre forward, you know, you do take advantage of the space you get. Now I think everyone's going to know what he plays like now. It's going to be a bit tougher for him, but I think he's more than capable. He's got good movement, you know, he's quick and he's got an eye for goals, so I think he's always got a chance of scoring more goals. And I think he'll do it. Naturally, he's going to be tougher than last season, we all know that. But I think he's got more than enough in his locker to prove that he can score goals this season as well.
I said everyone knows how he plays, but everyone knows how Messi plays, and you still can't stop him. Yeah. You see Chicharito and his movement in training, and
I know what you're saying, but you know what I mean. I think Messi and Chicharito—they're
different, yeah.
Just a little bit.
I see Chicharito here in training, and we've got some of the best centre halves in the world, and he's, you know, the runs he makes confuses them.
Oh, he moves them about.
It must be a nightmare marking.
Yeah, for sure. Because in the Premiership or wherever you're going to play, if you've got good movement, it's a big advantage. Yeah. You know, and he's got real good movement. Like I said beforehand, he's got eye for goal. He's got good pace. So that's a great ingredient for a good centre forward.
His timing in the box is unbelievable, isn't it? He's like, he reminds me a lot of Lineker. When I used to watch Lineker when I was younger, just the timing of Lineker, like he was always in the penalty area at that specific moment when it mattered. And Chicharito just. He's running. I love how he'll make a run forward and the defender will go forward and then he'll just ghost backwards and find himself a little bit of space. He's brilliant.
His finishing is top class. You watch him in training, he just finds the net every single shot.
Yeah.
Just the bottom corners all the time, left and right. And he can score with his face as well.
He settled fantastically well, but I think it helped a lot that he spoke good English when he joined and now speaks terrific English. David De Gea, one of the new signings we'll talk about, doesn't speak English. Obviously, he's trying to learn. Eric Steele is trying to speak to him a bit in Spanish. But how important is communication for a goalkeeper?
Massive. I know we always say it's football talk. Yeah. But football talk is football talk, you know. You've got to speak a little bit of English. And I think he will do. You know, I think he'll use or will learn the necessary words, you know, to play and goal. But he's still going to be tough. There's going to be at times he wants to try and explain himself, and he must probably do it in Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, because you revert back to what you know. But I think within time he'll overcome that. And the manager's made a very good signing there. He's definitely one for the future, put it that way. And for all the time I played at Man United, you know, I didn't play with a young goalkeeper. You know, with the Schmeichs and the Barthezes and goalkeepers like that. You know, so it's going to be interesting. But I think, actually, you'll turn it around.
Andrew, how quickly have you seen foreign players come into teams that you've been in and learn that English or get up to speed? How long can we expect it to be?
When I was playing in the teams we was playing in, you know, we had a lot of fun, but a lot of them were Norwegians or Scandinavian. So it's not a problem.
Yeah.
They slotted in, bang, there you go. And
they learn English as a second language from an early age. You know,
when Wan came in, Wan didn't mess about, wanted to speak English straight away and really got into it. You know, everything he shouldn't be saying, Wan was saying. But he got into it that way, and he was really, really good, because I think the culture for Wan, he loved it. You know, so it was easy for those kind of guys. But, I mean, De Gea, it's a bit tougher, because he speaks no English at all, does he?
No,
very little.
It's going to be a bit tougher. Man, like I said, he'll turn it around in 6 months.
Do you think we're only going to appreciate what a loss Edwin van der Sar is this season, simply because you're so used to seeing him there? He's been so good for so long. Suddenly he's gone, and you've got a kid who's half his age, with not much experience, who's now suddenly probably the number one goalkeeper for Manchester United going into the new season.
Yeah, I've been talking about this on tour. I think the fact that, you know, one of the finest footballers to have ever played for Manchester United, Paul Scholes, left this season at the same time as Van der Sar, I think that overshadowed the significance of Van der Sar leaving, you know, because everyone's talking about who's going to replace Scholes, Nasri and Schneider and all this kind of stuff. And it's taken the shine off the fact that, you know, outside of, certainly in my lifetime, Peter Schmeichel, Edwin van der Sar has been the most effective goalkeeper. And I've had the opportunity in coming to United to see him in huge European games where he always picked up his game, and he was just always super duper nice to me. You know, it was weird for me, like, you know, I've like met different people from different walks of life and stuff, and no one really kind of freaks me out apart from Manchester United footballers. You know, I get like starstruck around them more than I do anyone else, but Edwin van der Sar just had this ability to make you feel really comfortable, you know, and went out of his way to be nice to you. So yeah, I'll really miss him at United, and He's an incredible, incredible goalkeeper.
I think with Edwin, it was one of those positions that you didn't need to worry about.
No.
He was there, you knew what you were going to get from him. He's on the team sheet, then, all right, we're fine in goal. And you didn't have to think about Edwin's form or will he make a mistake or what will his kicking be like today, because it was just spot on and top notch every single time. I think consistency was just the biggest thing with Edwin, and I think that showed when he made that mistake against West Brom at Old Trafford. It was such a shock to people that he could do that. Whereas most goalkeepers would do that a few times a season.
Yeah, Bart tested it all the time, didn't he?
I remember Schmeichel doing one against Barnsley.
Yeah.
You know, but you wouldn't associate things like that with Schmeichel because he'd produce four or five world-class saves and again you turn around and say to yourself, Jesus, how's he done that? And then he'd do a rip and you scratch your head and say, Schmeichel, what are you doing? You know, but sometimes I think goalkeepers get a little bit bored when they ain't got nothing to do. And I think in Schmeichel's case, that was Schmeichel. He wanted to play up front half the time.
I think every goalkeeper is a frustrated centre forward.
There you go.
They?
But I think it's always tough when you try to replace a goalkeeper, especially with Edwin's class and obviously Peter. And if you look at it, how many goalkeepers could you turn around and say, well, we could have gone for? You know, so it's tough that way. So if the managers, I think we all know the managers building a new team. You know, a younger team, I think, 26, average age maybe, 24?
Yeah, but I think
younger,
about that.
It's
getting younger. You know, so a young goalkeeper, things work out really well for him. He'll be here for what, next 12?
He could play 10, for 20 12. Years if he plays as long as Edwin did.
You know, so
we're looking forward to this team.
His English will be okay by that stage.
Hopefully.
Yeah, definitely.
He's going to have those moments, isn't he? He's going to have those moments, you know, like a wintry, wet, snowy night at Old Trafford where he just has a nightmare and that's going to be the real test for him. Or a game where some big, imposing centre-forward like Drogba or something like that is just having a great game and gets right in his face and that'll be the real test for him. But he hasn't got to where he's got to without being a world-class goalkeeper, you know. So I think it's a great signing.
Yeah, I think the positive as well, Casillas, I believe he's going to be a fantastic goalkeeper.
Yes.
Now, if you look at someone like Casillas, me personally, I think he's most probably the best goalkeeper in the world. He's that good. You know, now, if he rates him as highly as that, he must have a chance because he's not a bad goalkeeper himself. He can judge a goalkeeper.
Better mention the other signings as well. Ashley Young, who's obviously experienced international footballer. Phil Jones is just at the start of his career. What do you make of those two?
I'm looking forward to Phil Jones. I think another young player, what's he,
19.
Now I've seen him play a few times for Blackburn, centre-half, and then steps into midfield, plays a holding midfield role as well. So, I think position-wise, you can fill in a few positions. I think you can even play full-back as well. You know, and I think that's a great acquisition for Football Club. Another one for the next 10, 12, 15 years. And you see him play, you can see what the manager sees in him. You know, he's a super player. Ashley Young, it's a step that no doubts everyone wants. You know, he played at Aston Villa for quite a few years. I mean, did it there. Now hopefully he can come to Manchester United and do the same kind of thing. I think we all know how talented he is. You know, but I'm glad it's the manager's decision.
Yeah.
You know, to who he's going to play on left or right side of midfield, because in those positions we are very, very strong.
I don't think any of us liked seeing John O'Shea leave this summer, but knowing that we had Phil Jones now as the future, and I think he's almost going to step into that the tag that John sometimes didn't like, the Mr. Versatile tag. But I think, as you said, Phil can play left fullback, right fullback, centre half, step into midfield. We've seen him already in training sessions over here in the US and in the match against Chicago Fire. He likes bringing the ball out of defence. He's very confident on the ball. And that's something that I think the coaches here at Manchester United encourage. We see Rio do that as well, get forward. Yeah. Even Nemanja Vidic, I think, recently, is in the last year or so, started to bring the ball out of defence.
I think Rio's always done that throughout his career, though. He can always step out and, you know, play that way. If you look at players, obviously, like Leddy King as well, can play that way as well. But I think it's a big plus when a centre-half can actually step out.
Yeah.
And then pass in the midfield and keep going.
And if you think in 5-10 years' time, we may have our back four already. Rafael, Fabio, Phil Jones, Chris Smalling, Johnny Evans in there as well.
Yeah.
David De Gea, goalkeeper. So the foundations are there already.
Yeah, cements the team, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Rooney rates him. Rooney's quoted as saying that he thought he was a very decent player, and Phil Jones, I should say, a difficult player to come up against, you know. So Wayne Rooney seems to know what he's talking about.
Talking of signings, interviewed David Gill recently, who said they are looking for one more. They want to try and sign one more player before the end of the transfer window. Most people think that's going to be a midfielder.
I've retired.
Most people think that's going to be a midfielder, and we all know the names that are linked with United, although no one's saying anything officially, obviously, but it's players like Snyder, Nasri and so on have been linked with the so-called Paul Scholes role. First of all, can you actually replace Paul Scholes, or is he a one-off?
No, you can't replace him. That's just in my eyes. I don't think you can replace Scholes, not just for his ability as a footballer, but his personality. You know, I think I was fortunate to play with him for a numerous amount of years, and you know, just a great, great player. And when you talk about replacing players, it's always tough to replace great players. And I don't know how we're going to replace him, or if the manager's looking to replace him. But you know, to bring in a player of his calibre, he's going to be tough. And I think the manager's gone on record saying he's looked at quite a few players and saying to himself, well, they're not really going to make my team a better team, so I'm not going to spend the money.
There's no point spending for the sake of it, is there?
There you go. Yeah. You can understand that. You know, if you can see a Paul Scholes somewhere, then you're going to get him. And you can see why he speaks about, or Nasri's been mentioned about coming to Manchester United. Because me personally, I think Nasri's a fantastic player. And I think he elevated himself even more last season when Fabregas wasn't playing. I think he proved to everyone, well, this is just how good I am. So if he had the opportunity to come to Man United, like to believe you would consider it, but it's not for us to be talking about players that are not Manchester United players.
You probably can. Is Snyder, do you like Snyder or Modric or?
I agree with Andrew. I mean, it's interesting as an outsider, every single player that has played for Manchester United at the same time as Paul Scholes rates Paul Scholes as one of the best players they played with. Every single person as a United fan from my generation wants to play like Paul Scholes more than anyone else. I mean, obviously everyone loves Giggsy and Rooney and some of these flair players, Ronaldo clearly, but like all my mates are like, if we could have a magic wand and turn into a football player, it would be Paul Scholes. And then on the continent, you know, like in Spain, in Germany, in France, they just absolutely love him. I know that after the Barca game, both, Xavi and Iniesta ran over to him to try and get their shirt from him because they rate him so highly. So I think he completely is irreplaceable. But, you know, I mean, if it's fantasy football stuff, I don't know where you go to, because he is a dream player, you know. I'd like to see Fabregas playing for United, but that's never going to happen, you know. I think he's an unbelievable player. Nasri would be great too, but I don't know. I think maybe you just have to be okay with mourning the fact that one of the great modern-day United players has gone, and you probably will feel that little gap for a little bit. You know?
The manager said on numerous occasions that we've lost good players in the past, and you can't replace players like for like. You almost never have the exact same type of player.
So we thought we'd never replace Roy Keane. Roy Keane's never been replaced. It's not like Michael Carrick.
But
became Roy Keane.
You adapt. You play differently. You play different players have different qualities. Ronaldo left. Yeah. You know, suddenly we've got Rooney stepped into a new role. We've got Hernandez and Berbatov and Nani stepped up, and there's always going to be someone who's going to come through. Maybe it's someone like Tom Cleverley, who's performed very well last season on loan. He's only young. It won't be Tom Cleverley this season, but maybe in a few seasons Tom Cleverley will be the man.
I think if you could replace players like for like, football would be boring.
You
never want a Cologne. I mean, you want someone who's got a little bit different. You know, Scholes, he had something different.
Although, if there was a Paul Scholes clone, you'd take him.
Why Scholes is so special? And Nev, I mean, we did a Q&A yesterday, and Nev was saying, you know, he's known Scholes since he was 12. You know, he said, Scholes, you couldn't run particularly fast. You know, I mean, didn't have the best stamina in the world. You know, I mean, could pass the ball. You know, could do everything a professional footballer does at the highest level and make it look so easy.
Yeah.
No, I always say, you know, when I listen to, I mean, great players talk, Zidane's and all those kind of guys, they talk about Paul Scholes glowingly, because they know just how good he was. And yeah, and that's we are going to miss him, you know, because he's a fantastic player. I mean, I know him off the pitch as well, and I think he's a top person off the pitch as well, which is, I mean, a great testament to him.
Andrew, we know, I guess, Scholes in recent years as a quiet guy who just likes to play football, go home. There's no headline seeking, or he doesn't like the glitz and glamour. Was he always like that?
Always
as well?
Like that. Always like that. I think that, like I said, no, knowing Scholes the way I do, you know, when we used to come back like this time of season, pre-season, used to be me and Scholes at the back, compliment. At the back, having a laugh. You know I mean, because we just knew how bad it. When it come to like long distance running, that we just knew how bad we were.
Yeah.
You know, he suffered with asthma. You know, so it made it even tougher for him. I mean, but when we was at the back, we always used to talk about things and whatever maybe. And I mean, when people say he's very quiet, he plays his football and goes home. But when you're with him in his company, you know, he could be very cutting. And I used to love that.
Very dry wit.
Oh, very, very yeah. dry.
How was his tackling in training?
Tackling exactly the same.
What's
exactly
that about?
Exactly the same.
What do you think that's about? Because how can he be so unbelievably good in so many areas and then just be pretty awful at tackling? What is that
about? Is Scholesy.
Is that the red-headed thing, you think? Just like little fire comes out.
I don't know. I remember when I left Man United and I played against Scholesy. Scholesy, he did me a beaut. Absolute beaut. And he looked at me and started laughing. You know? Because he knew within time I'd get him back. You know, because, like I said, we always had that rapport. You know, we always used to have a laugh and joke and that. But I mean, to see him retire now is a great testament to him. He's been an awesome player.
Amazing. I would have thought he would have worked in it at some point in training. He would have gone to someone like, you know, Rio
You can't go to school of tackling.
Ah, yeah. Oh, amazing.
That's a shocker in the FA Cup semi-final, mate, against him. What he went off to.
But to be brutally honest, yeah, we're all sitting in that. Are you surprised?
No.
Never. You're like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it.
Yeah, there were those moments in games where Old Trafford is like a gasp sometimes.
You see it coming, yeah. You just see it coming.
He was like, he stalked his prey and you could see it. Yeah. You knew it
was 10 yards away.
And he's made his mind up, right, that's it.
You talk about great players seeing things before it happens. The crowd at Old Trafford could often see a Paul Scholes tackle before it happened.
Yeah, amazing.
Looking at the season ahead now, is Manchester very much going to be the place to be? City are splashing the cash again, signing Aguero imminently. They're in the Champions League. There'll be Champions League games every week in Manchester. Yeah. Is that going to be a remarkable, you know, though there's a rivalry, is it going to even go further this season?
I think for the city of Manchester, it's going to be awesome. You know, I think we're all believing, you know, this season is going to be a close season. I think Manchester City, noisy neighbours, yeah, they are going to push Manchester United because they have the financial resources to push Manchester United. You know? And like you said, they're splashing their cash. Now, there's not many people can go out there and spend 38 million on a centre forward and still have a centre forward of Tevez's quality. You know, who doesn't want to be there, but most people will play. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. But like I said, you know, on a whole for the city, I think it's a great thing to have Champions League in the city. Like you said, every other week. We've got Premiership football there every other week now. Champions League.
I think it's brilliant.
Oh, it's like fantastic.
Being here in the US, what I've noticed, Chicago, for instance, the amount of top sports sides in one city.
Yeah.
You know, you've got baseball, the White Sox and the Cubs. You've got the Bulls basketball team, one of the best and most historic basketball teams in history. I think the Blackhawks, the ice hockey team. You've got the Fire now playing soccer. You can go and see top class sport, any sport. Any weekend, you know, the options are brilliant. And for people who aren't necessarily United fans or City fans or just football fans or fans of sport in general, to have Champions League football on probably Tuesday and a Wednesday night now.
It gives everyone the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, that's what major cities should have. Manchester's a major city.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at, obviously, London, all the London clubs, the Arsenal, Chelsea's, Tottenham last season, played Champions League football, and everyone wants that.
Yeah.
We're going to have it. Hopefully they'll get knocked out the first stage.
We're going to do well, but not too well.
Centre of world football. I said to my dad, I was like, you know, obviously City are a force to be reckoned with now, but it's been such a long time since they've been in the Champions League. I think they might get a bit of a rude awakening playing against teams, just being a bit overawed by being in those stadiums they've not been in for a while.
It'll take time. I mean, they've played in the Europa League, so they don't have to get used to the idea of playing midweek games or travelling to Europe, because they've done that for the last few seasons. But the Champions League is something different, isn't it?
Yeah, and what we've done previously in Champions League history, I mean, that's tough as hell. Now, if Man City think they're going to emulate that because they've got loads of money to spend, they will have a rude awakening, because it doesn't take a lot of money to emulate what Manchester United have done for a numerous amount of years in the European Cup.
Yeah.
And how intense do we think the rest of the Premier League will be? Bear in mind, Chelsea have got a new manager, he's 4 years younger than Ryan Giggs, frighteningly. You've got Arsenal going to be roughly there. And Liverpool, are they going to be revitalised? Are they going to be genuinely up there?
I think if you look at Liverpool, I mean, they'll be disappointed. that we've overawed them now.
Say that again.
You know, so appointing Kenny Dalglish, and if you look at the way Kenny Dalglish has gone about his team now, Kenny Dalglish, it's like he's doing what the manager's doing. He's going young, building for the future. Now, that might take a couple of years to get to where he wants to get to, but within a couple of years, Liverpool most will be another force to be reckoned with. Chelsea, another one. If you've got those kind of resources, he's not going to pay, I don't know, £13 million to get a manager out of his job and give him no money to buy players. So he's building for the future there. So I think Premiership this season is going to be really exciting. Really, really exciting. Arsenal, I'm not sure. I'm not really sure if they're going to have enough.
Top four?
They might struggle to be in the top four.
I don't know if they've spent enough this summer.
And we see what's happening in the papers or whatever. They're always saying he's got loads of money to spend, but he's always trying to nick players.
Yeah.
When you're playing at the level these guys are playing at now, these £2 million players are not going to be good enough to cut it at the highest level to get to where they want.
Yeah, it's kind of it's got them almost there, but they've been almost there for 5-6 years now without winning a trophy. So maybe something that policy has to be tweaked a little bit, you think.
Yeah. I think this might be the season where Tottenham push him out of the top four and Tottenham finish in the top
four. That's going to be an interesting rivalry, isn't it? Again, Arsenal-Tottenham. That's going to be interesting to look at which North London club comes out on top.
I like the way Tottenham play. I don't think they're going to win the Premier League either, but I like the way they play, and I think the manager's unbelievably talented, and I just think that they might be the team to push Arsenal out. I still think it's ours to lose, you know. Yeah. I think there's enough kind of changes going on at Chelsea that I think it will ruffle their feathers a little bit, and they'll have to concentrate on new manager, how the egos kind of bond with the new manager, and that'll distract them from doing something significant in the Premier League. Yeah. But
I think the same. I think we've got more than enough to win it. I know we've lost Ed and Scholesy, but if you're looking at it as a squad, I think we've got more than enough to win it. You know, I will keep saying, if Man City are going to play the same way they did last season, this season, you know, in the Premiership, you can't win too many games like that. I don't think you can actually win the Premiership title playing the way they did last season. You know, in Italy, in the Premiership, when you need to score goals, you need to play a bit more expansive football, a bit of cutting edge. I think that's what they're missing. So when you talk about, like we were talking beforehand about Nasri, you can see why they need a player like him, because he's got that cutting edge whereby if they've got him, that can, cause problems for a lot of teams.
I'm not sure they scored too many goals from midfield last season.
Well, which, that's what I'm talking
again,
about,
Nasri, that's why you'd want him, because he chips in a lot.
You know, we talk about Tevez. I mean, in an average team, Tevez has got himself 20-odd goals against.
Yes. Yeah.
And don't forget, he's not supposed to be a goal scorer. Yeah. So he must be doing something right. So I think if you take away Tevez's 25 goals or whatever he gets, you need to replace them.
But you know, you saw the start. I don't know if you saw the Balotelli thing.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And the manager chased him down the line. You can't possibly ever imagine that sort of thing happening at United.
No.
So is there a sign that is a combustible dressing room with another guy coming in now, Aguero, Tevez? Is that all going to go off at some point?
It could do, because I've never seen so many noises come out of one football club. And Tevez is there, and they're saying if he goes, we won't miss him. Certain players not happy with him, take away the captain and all that. But what we see the other day with Balotelli, I don't think anyone in their right mind playing for Manchester United would even consider it doing that. And then when he got taken off, to actually try and stand there and not with his manager.
Crazy.
Wow.
I think Andrew just said the key phrase, that anyone in their right mind.
Would it be worth trying that if Sir Alex was a manager?
Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
Everyone was laughing because all the boys, and obviously me and Neves, were saying, you know, that's the funniest thing they've ever seen on a football pitch. And then he tried to play it off, but I was offside. Come on, man.
Yeah.
But for Mancini to stand there and have a go at him and he's having to go back, I tell you what.
Yeah, he's a naughty boy. No. He's a naughty boy.
All right, before we call Holt, just to sum up what we think about the tour, how we think it's gone, your experiences of seeing fans, sponsors, whatever, players. What have you made of the last couple of
weeks? I think in the US, you touched on it before, Stu. You know, it's definitely, definitely grown now. You know, football in the US is growing. You know, it's nice to see. It's nice to see the boys come here and play some good competitive matches, get big crowds, and everyone enjoying themselves. And you'd like to believe the next time we are, maybe in a couple of years or whatever, it's moved on even more. So I think me personally being there, I think it's been a great success at all. I think everyone's been really, really happy with it.
Excuse me. You know, it's truly mystifying to me to walk outside of the hotel that Manchester United are staying in and see 30, 40 people as opposed to 300, 400, 500 people, you know. I mean, I was chatting to a friend the other night, we went out to get dinner, and I just said, you know, this is weird that this unbelievably successful team outside of this territory is only getting, you know, it's getting interest, but a small amount of interest. Like, I was trying to explain to this person, if they were in Europe, if they were in South America, if they were in Asia, they couldn't go out. Yeah. They'd have to do everything in the hotel, you know. And but I do think it's growing. I do think it's improving. This is the first time I saw a few games when United came to LA, but I live in LA, so it was a bit different. This is actually me being on tour. I mean, the operation that has been run internally is just amazing, you know, it's so slick. And I think these type of tours will only continue to help United grow. And they do love United here, because anytime they talk about a football team, certainly an English football team, it's only ever United. They never mention Chelsea, they never mention Liverpool, they never mention City. It's only ever United. And then obviously, you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid get a little bit of play because, you know, there's some real stars in there. But I think 2, 3, 4 years' time, that star will continue to rise. And by the time you guys probably next come back, because you've got 2 years in Asia, and then where's the one after that?
I think certainly Asia next year. I'm not 100% sure where it will be after that.
So if you came back 3 or 4 years later, I think you'd notice something that had exploded a little bit.
Well, that's what you want. I was speaking to someone the other day. I think he is the guest of David Gill, well, vice versa. And he was saying, for a country that loves sports so much, he doesn't understand why they don't like football. Mm. You look at it and say, you don't. Why do you not like football? It's very diverse here. So you're saying, well, football played all around the world. Everyone loves football, except the US. Crazy.
Yeah.
I can't get my head around that.
There's a lot of competition for space. American football, baseball, basketball, ice hockey, all that kind of stuff. And also, I think we were having this conversation the other night, I try and explain to people that if a game ends 0-0 or a game ends 1-0, that doesn't mean that there's one piece of action. There's battles that go on in midfield, or you know, drama that goes on with the goalkeeper. But Americans, especially if you watch like basketball or American football, in basketball, if they don't do something in 24 seconds, they get penalised. Yeah. And in American football, it's the same. There's a time limit. They need immediate action. And America are all about that immediate kind of feeling.
But we would have enjoyed the last 10 minutes of the game against Blackburn.
Then nothing happened for 7 years. But we went to the baseball, and you know, it goes on for days, basically. There's still always something going on. Big screen, fans involved, something going on, sponsors. It's just that people going out all the time, eating enough food to...
Just play the YMCA for a minute and everyone gets up and down.
Maybe it keeps them sticking over, doesn't it? Baseball.
It's terrible. I mean, American football, I've been now to a few Super Bowl parties because it's a big deal. It's like the FA Cup final over here. So you go to the Super Bowl. There was some stat that I got from a friend of mine who doesn't like American football either. He's American, where he said, I can't remember the exact stat, but the actual amount of open play when the sport is actually occurring was something like 2.5 minutes, and the rest of the 3 hours of the game was replays and adverts. I mean, they do something, then it cuts to an advert. So they're all trying to sell you a car or a burger or, you know, like some item of clothing. Whereas what I love about football, which I explain to Americans, is 45 minutes of sport, a break, 45 minutes of sport. There's none of this rubbish, you know, here's a McDonald's, here's a burger.
Although I have enjoyed our games over here that they kicked off at like 8:04 and 30 seconds.
Yeah,
isn't time to get that commercial break in just before kickoff.
Yeah.
It's been really good. I've loved being out here. I've liked seeing the differences between the US and the English football. The little things like the fans, the, you know, the tailgating they do here before matches, and people back home may not know exactly what tailgating is, but
essentially, in England?
Well, I'm not sure. Essentially, fans turn up early, park their car in the car park, open up the boot, get out a barbecue, a couple of chairs, and just sit around in the car park.
I'm sure that will work on car park W3 old Trafford on a December afternoon.
It's great because people, it's an event for them, isn't it? It's not just the 90 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a big event. And in Seattle there was the big march before the game. It's tradition that they start in the centre of town, there's a brass band, music, people, loads of colour, and they march down the street, and there's loads of bars in between the city centre and the stadium, and people just kind of tack on to the end of the march as it passes their bar.
Right.
So by the time you get to the stadium, there's a couple of thousand people that all in this big line, like an army of fans walking towards the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great to see. From my point of view, a journalist, it's been different seeing the kind of the things that American players are used to doing and the access. You hear about locker room interviews in baseball and NFL, and that's exactly what it says on the tin. They go into the dressing room.
We went to watch Seattle play the few days before they played United, just to see what it was like. And after the game, even though they didn't really know who we were, we just told them we were from United TV, and they just said, right, who do you want to speak to? Come down to the dressing room after the game. So you go in the dressing room, the players are getting dressed, whatever, speak to who you want in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And they couldn't be more helpful. It's a rather a different culture.
It wouldn't
culture,
happen at Old Trafford, would it?
Nah. I had that this summer, the first time I ever met Bex. Yeah. I was with Gemma Thompson, who works for United. And we were at the Galaxy. They took us into the dressing room, so we're waiting for Bex. And I said to the guy, is there anywhere I could go to have a pee? And he was like, yeah, just go into the dressing room. I turn around the corner, it's just full of naked football players getting undressed. And there's no way you could do this at Old Trafford. You just wouldn't have that access, you know. So it is crazy that there's a different kind of level. But I think, you know, Andrew's right. They love sport in America. They really do love it. And the fact that the women's the World Cup, yes, America got to the final. And also, I think if America do anything in the World Cup, the men, do anything in the World Cup, like a quarter-final or a semi-final, that'll do something for them too. Because there are some talented American footballers now, you know. I mean, Donovan did all right at Everton, didn't he? And
Americans love winning. They love being number one. Yeah. So if they've got a national team that does well, you're right, they'll go for it.
Why they don't like cricket. 5 days and end in a draw.
Sounds a bit like baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as they start winning, I think there is a bit of a standoffish element of like, well, we don't like it because we're not very good at it. Yeah. But as soon as they start winning, they'll be like, oh, we love this spot.
Best.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Sure. Well, we'll call a halt. Thank you so much to Andrew Cole, Dominic as well, and to Nick Coppe. And that is it from this edition of Red Voices. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.